May what we share together in this conversation be elegant, clear, and of maximum benefit to all who happen upon it. And may the blessings spread far and wide and serve the light of the truth.
Thank you. I want to welcome you warmly to the Conscious Evolution Summit, dear Miranda.
Thank you.
All viewers and listeners all over the globe.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, same. So I never met you in person, but I feel very connected to you and to what you share because it's why I live. What you share is the reason why I live. And this is also the reason why I organized this summit. It's a lot of work and it's a lot of new things for me, but it's really coming from this wish to inspire many people and to give them support and inspiration and touch people in their deepening, in their awakening, in their way of finding out what is life about, who I am, and
it's so important because we all want to live a true, authentic, meaningful life, and that's not really possible until we have some deep, direct interior knowledge of who and what we are. But who and what we are is subtle. It's not something we can answer conceptually, but we can experience our nature. And as we experience our nature, we get to feel and see that we're not separate from the nature of everything and everyone. Your true nature and my true nature is really an ours, our true nature. It's not like real estate that we can carve up. And so that's part of why it's so important in our world today, because when we truly get it, that who you are, what I am, is not made of a different substance, then what naturally comes is tremendous love and reverence for everything and for everyone, for life itself. And that lends itself to treating one another beautifully, impeccably, kindly, compassionately, with deep respect. And I think those are qualities that our world really needs more of right now.
Mm. Yeah, and what then also happens, what I sense is when I, for me, it has a lot to do with relaxing, letting go.
Absolutely.
Becoming very, very simple, also very soft, very subtle. And then it just often happens that the sheer fact of breathing, of seeing, of smelling, of feeling, nothing special, but just that those ordinary things happen, and I experienced that, this brings tears into my eyes. It's so incredible, and sometimes it feels it's so powerful and so huge that sometimes I tend even to kind of try to make it smaller because it can feel really overwhelming.
Yeah, well, what you're describing, Piriya, is what I call ego relaxation. Mm-hmm. And I use that term quite deliberately because the term that has often been used by many spiritual teachers and paths is the term surrender. Mm. You know, and of course, that is the name of the heart of it, of all spiritual practices, to learn to surrender, to let go. But often our mind gets in the way of the process and misunderstands surrender as some kind of practice of amputating or transcending. We think of surrender as getting rid of something or, you know, getting over something. Or our culture even equates surrender with defeat or losing, you know, like okay, you win, I surrender. But the true spiritual surrender, I believe, is really a process of learning to relax, both relax out of the historical patterned habits that we all have that are not easy at times to let go of, but also relaxing into an unshakable presence within, where we are returned to our primordial true nature. And when that happens, it's very simple, it's very direct, it's very natural. It feels like the familiar self isn't actually doing anything, and which is exactly what's happening. You know, the usual manipulation and trying to change, fix, even transform ourselves, you know, lets go. And what happens is something that's very natural, really. And yet you can't force this, but I like to think that it just that we can learn, you know, for example, progressive muscle relaxation at the end of a yoga class by bringing our awareness, our attention to what's tight or fixed and just seeing if it can melt. So ego relaxation is a practice of seeing what's bound or seeing what isn't quite able to let go, and just bringing loving awareness to it and then seeing if some melting can happen. And it's a little bit like I think of, you know, ice. A hard block of ice will melt in the warmth of the sun. You don't have to hack away at your ego, but you do have to bring it into loving awareness. And then whatever is exposed to the light becomes transformed by the light and is returned to light. That's a direct quote from the Bible, actually. So we see that this understanding is there at the heart of all mystical traditions, but often it's not very well understood.
Yeah, and what I also experienced, that I would say often it has a lot to do with accepting. And I remember just a few weeks ago, I was in a situation where my whole body, I have really this tendency that I feel a lot really physical. Mm-hmm. So I felt my body tense and tight, and I didn't know really what is happening. But of course, when I experienced that, I'm not aware of my true nature, and I don't really experience this connectedness. And then I was sitting there and I just kind of said to myself, how would it be if you could just accept? And it was a bit coming and going, because something said, no, I can't, I'm tight, you know. But then I continued. I said, all right, and there is this tightness. And what if there is this tightness and you could accept it? And I repeated that again and again. And then there came a moment where this fundamental relaxation happened. And in this moment, I just looked around in my room and everything was vibrating of love.
Right.
Everything felt so alive. I felt even my chair felt was hugging me, was embracing me.
Yeah.
You know, that everything responded immediately in this little inner shift, what happened, where this deep, deep acceptance.
Yeah. Well, what you're describing sounds remarkably like some of the foundational lines of inquiry that I give my students in terms of how to actually let ego relaxation become a practice. So one of the foundational lines of inquiry, I often give specific questions that we can journey into as supports. And so one of the primary questions I give at the very beginning is, what's it like in body, heart, and mind if you allow all things to be exactly the way they are? Now, of course, this is a very simple, but it's quite a radical invitation to journey into what it's like in all of our being, somatically, you know, in emotionally, in terms of our awareness, if we allow everything to be exactly the way it is, you know, so we're ceasing to fight how things are, even though how we're experiencing the way things are might be impacted by distorted filters and beliefs and projections, which it usually is. But even if we allow space for that, just like the sky allows space for all kinds of weather, what happens is something very subtle but profound. We drop out of the consciousness of a contracted self that is trying to control and manipulate the universe to fit some idea of what is required so that we can be at peace. And so by accepting or allowing all things to be as they are, we cease and desist the control, the fight. And so we relax into a larger embrace that is fundamentally loving and fundamentally peaceful. We can't talk ourselves into it, though. You have to lean in to that space. And so sometimes little inquiry questions can point our awareness in the right direction that makes it practically possible in a moment of tension to engage what we're speaking of.
Could you share some of those inquiries you could bring?
Well, sure. Many of them. It depends what subject you want me to open up. So this one that I've just shared is foundational. You know, so we would usually begin by exploring the limitations. You know, what do I insist needs to change before I can be at peace? Right? And who is the self? Who is it that is insisting? And so if we don't judge or make wrong the fact that that might be happening, but we just expose it to the light of awareness as if everything that's exposed, we're just seeing with gratitude, with acknowledgement. We're not making it right or wrong. We're just letting everything be exposed to the light. So I would, you know, encourage, you know, staying with that question or perhaps getting a friend you trust. And I'm a big advocate of practicing in relationship because so much of our ego patterning and our defenses and our constructs, it emerged in those primary relationships that we all came out of, our mother, our father, our family of origin. And so sometimes we need the love and the support and the human contact of human relationship to let these things relax. So usually I'll invite my students to practice in pairs with one another, and one will be asking the other a question for like 10 minutes. So what do you insist needs to change before you can be at peace? Who is the self that is insisting this? 10 minutes one way, we switch so the other gets to have a go. And then we explore what's it like in body, heart, mind, if you allow all things to be exactly the way they are. So I'm a big advocate of exposing the obstacles first, because if you do, there's two things. It means that we're actually allowing transformation in the area that most needs to be transformed. And secondly, you're not spiritual bypassing. You're not just trying to transcend the dense material that needs to be unwound, needs to be understood, needs to be contacted with love in order for it to let go. And so as we allow space for that too, then there's a lot more scope to then explore what's beyond it. And of course the question, what's it like in body, heart, mind, if you allow all things to be exactly as they are, if we stay with that question for like 15 minutes back and forth, you know, it's beautiful what can open up, what we can experience, that's always here when we actually let everything be. And that's really what ego relaxation is. Be nothing, do nothing, get nothing, become nothing, seek for nothing, relinquish nothing, be as you are, rest in God. Now that is both a transmission that you might have felt just listening. It's a transmission that is just putting this beautiful interruption through the usual commentary and judgment and fear and concerns and neuroses. So it's like having an instantaneous vacation from all of that. But it's simultaneously an ongoing practice for life and can and wants to be practiced in and amidst the ordinariness of our life in the way that I've been describing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is really something what interests me, and I just want to share that when I follow just your words, I had an image of a feather just moving down to the ground, very, very soft, very tender. And also the other sensation which I get is a vastness, a movement of expansion, and where I almost feel in a way, yes, there is this body, there is flesh and bones, but in a way it seems that awareness shifts and I get also more, become more aware of, I would say, maybe the energy level, the without structure, without, no matter.
Yeah, what you're describing, I think, is presence. That has a palpable quality to it. In fact, there are a lot of different qualities of presence, you know, that come online as we drop out of the ego commentating mind. As our consciousness opens up, what happens is we drop out of our mental boundaries that we're usually not aware we're operating out of all the time until we're not. And, you know, it seems as if we drop out of our mental boundaries, we would just sort of, you know, be in some floaty state. But quite the contrary, we become more fully embodied, more fully present. It's just that our consciousness isn't bound by our physical location or anything to do with our physical body. And yet we're more deeply and fully here. And what happens is even our somatic embodied experience becomes more sensitive and more awake. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways that happened for me that was very game-changing was one day when I was, you know, in a process of really integrating this profound shift that had happened in Ramana Maharshi's cave that, you know, took me on quite a journey of relinquishing everything that I had known. It was a very powerful period of undoing that lasted a couple of years and was pretty edgy at times. And every time I'd come to an edge of my capacity to just really trust and allow what was happening, I would pray, you know, what now? You know, like, help, what now? And I kept hearing this very soft inner voice that was the same that had arisen in the cave and brought forth that transmission of ego relaxation, saying, just keep opening, just keep softening, just keep allowing. And I knew that that was trustworthy and real. Mm-hmm. Only, you know, there would be times when it was hard. And so I would say, how much more? And the same loving voice would speak, until your surrender's total.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, only until the total surrender has taken place, you know, we hit these places where there's a shakiness of our usual way of knowing ourselves, our usual way of orienting through the world. Our mind can't believe how it would be possible to get anything done without the filter of a separate self or without tensing and contracting in some way. So it's a big process of learning to really trust, you know, to trust that. And one day I was sitting on the mountain, Arunachala, that is, and I was waiting to go into Skanda Ashram, the cave where so much had happened for me. And for some reason, you know, the lovely Swami who would open the cave at 8 a.m. was late that morning. So I was just sitting on a big flat rock overlooking this ancient Shiva temple below. And I really felt my whole body as sort of part of the mountain. It was an extraordinary experience that I hadn't really had before. And then it felt as if my lower body, my pelvis, my legs, my feet, my hips, my deep belly was grounded in an infinite mountain, a mountain that had no circumference, no time, was infinite. And I could feel there's this infinity of total support to relax completely, to truly be as we are, and to really recognize and receive the fact that we are here by a grace deeper than we can even fathom, and we're totally supported by it. And so that became a focus of meditation, of just feeling myself resting in an infinite mountain as if my lower body was subsumed by this mountain that had no circumference. What I noticed happened is it brought this incredible stability that wasn't there before, that really allowed the mind to drop and the quiet to get stabilized and the heart to open more fully. And it resolved so many psychodynamic issues I'd had for pretty much all my life, of sort of feeling like the support I needed wasn't quite available. And I could see how so many of my familiar mechanisms of control were actually a reaction from not feeling this. And then I started to see that was true for pretty much everyone else. We think we're the doer. We think we're the ones that have to figure out how to make things happen, how to get enlightened, how to be real. And we can't. And so the ego has to surrender, has to submit. But it equates that with giving up, defeat, death, annihilation, being taken over by another's dominating will, all sorts of things. And so it makes an enormous difference when we can recognize there is something to relax down into. There is something we're already in and part of that causes the earth, causes the trees and the plants, causes our bodies. I call it the ground of grace. And that is what all of our concerns and fears and doubts and yearnings and desires, the whole thing can relax in and down into. And when that happens, it's a game changer. So it's become a meditation practice. I call it the mountain of presence, and I recorded it. It's in the sanctuary of my website. People can download it. And I recommend it to just about everybody because it's so helpful. And so helpful in helping us to stabilize and embody our realization too.
That's very interesting, because I had a bit of similar experience, because I stayed, I guess, the last 5 years every winter for a few weeks in Tiruvannamalai and also in the cave, and I loved it. And then it happened, I guess, after 3 or 4 years. I had a similar feeling, like I wasn't separate anymore from the quality I was experiencing there. So I could sit here in Germany in my yurt, close my eyes, and I felt totally the same as if I would be there.
Yeah, that's happened for me too, which is why I don't go to India as much as I used to, because it's not necessary. It's lovely.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think that's an important thing, that I think that's true non-dual experience, when not only you're experiencing the boundaries fall away, you experience the sense of separate self falling away, but that you start to realize that, you know, whatever you're experiencing is you.
Yeah. And also, kind of the interesting thing is that I experience that now part of my awareness can kind of be there and still habits or movements or certain tensions can happen in my body or in my personality. Mm-hmm. But when I sense that a part of my awareness is there in this, how did you call it, this unshakable presence or this
mountain of presence, yeah.
It feels like, for me, it feels like a bit as if there would be a loving parent be there for me, for my personality, for a struggle. And this supports that this relaxation can happen in a way.
Well, another quality of presence that has been very strong for me, and it was strong from the age of 13, because that's when it first opened up, that relates to what you're saying, is the quality of boundless love. Mm. And for me, the boundless love aspect feels like being in a sea of infinite golden light. Mm. And it's loving, it's fundamentally loving and nourishing, and has more of a feminine feeling. I feel it feels very holding and nurturing. Mm. And so what I've found is that there are different flavors. They're obviously ultimately coming from the same source, but there are different flavors of how grace, direct experience of what is, can come online. And each dimension has a particular activity on our consciousness or our soul that is very transformative and helpful. And what I've found is that there's really no limit to the dimensionality in my own experience, is not just pure awareness. Mm. You know, the feeling of resting in an infinite mountain produces a particular depth of support and quiet, whereas the experience of being in and part of boundless love feels like being in a golden ocean. Mm. Right? Those things aren't separate, but they are distinct, mm-hmm. you know, and have a particular effect on our soul that serves to help us let go and relax and just be as we are.
And so what me also interests, I mean, I would say in those moments where I experience those different facets of this presence, they almost, or most of the time, they happen voluntarily, not me really kind of doing yeah. something. And, but I can also see that I felt that it was supportive that I tasted those qualities, and then there started a curiosity and this longing to find out more about it.
And yeah, of course. Well, once you taste these deeper yeah. realms, it's so beautiful, so freeing, so liberating. It's so the answer to what we've been wanting all this time, and it is our own nature. And so it's completely natural once an aspect of grace comes alive in our direct experience, we want to understand what is this, you know, and you can't force it. It's a curious thing, you know, you have to engage practices. There are many non-dual teachers these days that preach a gospel that no practice is necessary. I'm not one of those teachers. I've been working with people full-time, one-on-one and in groups, helping their process for 30 years. And I personally feel that tremendous dedication and practice is necessary. Only, you know, at the beginning of our path, we're usually practicing meditation or inquiry or prayer, inner work, because we're suffering and we need to get out of our suffering or find some way to work with it or transcend it or transform it. But as things refine, what starts to happen is our motivation for engaging meditation, inquiry, prayer, whatever we work with, starts to evolve, and it becomes driven more by love and curiosity. Mm-hmm. You know, because we realize what our heart really loves is the real, that is the beloved of our heart.
Yeah, and then it feels also like kind of almost as if you would train a muscle, and then I can sense that when there is, let's say, a challenge or a certain situation which is more difficult, a few years ago I would have judged that and I would have loved it differently. But now it's, oh, all right, let's see how can I be with that and relax into that, even though parts of me want to escape or don't like it, but still, and this is, it can be both. I can experience the mind or something which doesn't like it, which would like to have it different. And that there is still an openness and an availability and an curiosity. Let's see how it works under these circumstances.
That just works a lot better than judging it and trying to beat yourself into spiritual shape. It's just more effective. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you love someone, like when you love a person, what's natural is you want to learn all about them. You want to find out what they're like, what their little peculiarities are. And it's sweet, right? And that's not hard work. It just comes very naturally. And so that virtue of curiosity that you're describing is so helpful and is so the antidote to the judgment and the aggressing upon ourselves in the name of awakening that can often happen, which is really coming from a confusion as to what spiritual practice involves. Now, it seems that you're clear that the practice is learning to relax, learning to be with what is. Well, that's a good match because that's what I'm teaching too. So once you really understand that's the practice, that's the thing that wants to be supported, that's what's going to help you evolve, that's what's going to help you let go, that's what's going to support transformation, and that's also what's going to help you to surf into greater intimacy with the subtle depths of our being, then, you know, what we see is that that kind of musculature has developed. And for many people, it's not yet developed. You know, most people that I speak to, it's hard for them to stop rejecting themselves. It's hard for them to not judge themselves when some fear or control or something from the past arises again. They feel terribly disappointed in themselves. You know, so I think it's a huge revolution to be able to hold even your ego lovingly, kindly, with reverence, recognizing that even your ego and all of its fixated defenses and patterns and judgments from the past, the nature of our ego is still God. Mm-hmm. In the same way that a hard block of ice, while it might be opaque, frozen, dense, the fundamental substance of that frozen block of ice is still water. Mm. And in the same way, even the parts of ourself that many of us would so wish weren't there, wouldn't be showing up, but are showing up, even the substance of that is divine. And so when we recognize that, it helps us to work with those parts of ourself, you know, with humility, curiosity, kindness, you know, truthfulness, patience, willingness, which are all the qualities or virtues that every mystical system has grokked that serve us very well to be able to relax out of our fixations and to get more intimate with what's real. Mm. And those are muscles that we can develop. And so big part of the foundational teachings that I offer, you know, is about developing those muscles, about developing our trust, developing our honesty, developing our curiosity, developing non-attack, developing humility, developing willingness and patience. And I have whole bodies of inquiry questions and meditations that expose the obstacles to those qualities coming online and help us deepen into them. And if nothing else, this is practical stuff. It'll help us not only in our inner life, but it'll help us in our practical life in the world as well. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that, you know, is really curious, is that spiritual practice, deep spiritual truth, is while it might be subtle, it's immensely practical, immensely helpful. And I really like to emphasize that, you know. I mean, really, it's rubber meets road kind of stuff that not only changes us, but transforms our world.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that, I mean, I'm kind of interested in spirituality since I'm 16 or 17, so almost 30 years. But I guess it started maybe 10 years ago. It's more and more difficult to use the word spirituality because for me it becomes more and more so natural, so uneventful, and so, as you said, so practical that it's, I don't want to separate it.
Well, because, you know, spirituality and every aspect of life is not too, you know, Ramana understood this. Yeah. He said, when your true realized nature is realized, it will not be separate from the ordinary activities of life. And yet that's a very big body of practice for most people, because inevitably it's easier when we're on the meditation cushion, you know, when we're giving full attention to just being present with our breath, to just relaxing into direct experience, to quieting down, whatever method we're using. And yet, of course, it's much harder when someone's in your face and they're, you know, pressing your buttons, or they're behaving in ways that are difficult, to not react, you know, or if you do react, to actually work with your own reactivity in a way that is elegant, let's say, you know. And so this is what I call closing the gap between what we might understand from those luminous moments inwardly and what's actually going on in the ordinariness of any given day. And that's where work is.
Yes, yes. And in your experience, because this is really also and topic I'm very interested in, really closing this gap where it can really be next to each other and be fully embodied in our simplicity in everything. In your experience, what practice or what I sense often, it's, I wouldn't call it so much a practice. Yeah, it is a practice, but it's really inward. It has a lot to do with an inner attitude or inner posture. In your experience, what supports that?
Well, a lot of things support that. And of course, it will depend on how someone's personality is constructed. Mm-hmm. You know, what's really difficult for some is not an issue for others, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So I think there are foundational practices like the mountain of presence, foundational inquiries that are about what's it like if we just allow all things to be as we are, like learning some of the principles for being present and undefended with what is. And that's not a concept. You know, that's as visceral and heartful as it is a shift in our awareness. It's body, heart, mind, right? Mm-hmm. But so it's also important to cultivate deep trust. And you can't cultivate deep trust really until you've exposed the blocks to trust and you've opened to receive and recognize divine love, right, as primordial and always here, independent of any history or personality. And so there's a lot of foundational work that has to happen that is really turning over the rocks of fear and concern. And we'll notice that whenever any reaction arises, if we ask, who am I in this reaction, it'll be a young one, it'll be a young child, or it will be, oh, this is my mother's lineage or my father's lineage, it'll be something from the past. But we need to not just neti-neti that and open up and open our heart towards it with love, with compassion, because it's love's presence that melts the defense and the armor and brings the healing that much of our ego needs. And I think this is especially true for Westerners, because our culture has been a lot more disconnected than what we might find in Tibet or India, you know. So I think this is especially true for Westerners. Our psychology is more complicated and usually has more trauma in it. Mm-hmm. And so we have to address that. Otherwise, it will block us from stabilizing, you know, our deeper insights and being able to go further inwardly into deeper levels of non-duality. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that's involved. You know, that's why I say I don't believe the teachers that say no practice is required. Because if you look at the biography of any spiritual giant, you'll see that after Ramana's powerful awakening when he was 16, what did he do? He went to Tiruvannamalai and he meditated in a cave for 15 years. Why? Well, it seems to me like he was stabilizing his realization. Mm. We look at Nisargadatta, who was famous for I am that, and, you know, profound what he had to say and how many beings he's influenced. And yet he himself did 5 times a day puja, traditional Hindu puja, with the deities. You know, you look at the Dalai Lama and the beauty and the radiance and clarity of his beings that is so inspirational. We just have to look at a photograph of the Dalai Lama and you recognize what's really there. And if you read, you know, how he spends his mornings, 2 out of the 4 hours of his daily spiritual practice involve curiously exploring his motivation for what he does in the world, checking himself out. You know, is my ego appropriating this? Am I trying to, is there a self trying to get anything? And like, frankly, that to me speaks volumes. So I think that it's very important to explore our own ego structure, what its weaknesses are, where we tend to be most fixated. And if we don't know, then just take a look at what happens when you go and visit your family of origin for a week and you'll find out. Right?
Yeah, so it, for me, it has a lot to do with really being honest to yourself.
Right. And yet that honesty has to be accompanied by love and mm-hmm. kindness, because none of us had any choice in how our ego developed. Mm-hmm. It developed, you know, some would say, you know, through previous lifetimes, but certainly what we know in this lifetime, as children, we all had to kind of adapt to survive our early environment and make things workable within our family of origin, and that becomes the train tracks of our personality, of our default reactions. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe you can skip over that material. I haven't seen anybody successfully skip over it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I get criticized in the non-dual community for being too psychological, but I stand by that. I think it's really important, because what is our ego really, but a lot of our psychological defenses and all these patterns of tension in our body and the conviction that we're right. So all of that has to be met with love and from love. And only then can it melt. And can we just accept our personality structure, but not identify with it, not be so defended about it. Mm-hmm. So when someone gives us feedback or something, we can just kind of look at that and go, oh yeah, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean that, you know. And it's not such a big deal, and we don't have to feel bad about the way that we got shaped and patterned. We just need to get to know who we are more deeply than that. But that's really only possible once there's been forgiveness for our ego, and that's an ongoing process as more things come to light.
Mm-hmm. So when I listened to you and when I connected to the topic of the summit, so really conscious evolution, so what I just sense when I listen to you is, I would put it put the label on it, a lot of female qualities.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my way of... I can't help it. I'm in a female body and I'm a very feminine being. I'm not trying to be. It's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. And so there's naturally a very nurturing, but at the same time uncompromising way of approaching the path that is holistic and inclusive. You know, if you think about what the feminine actually does, the activity of the feminine is, she opens mystically new life forms in her. She has to surrender to let that new life come out of her. And then there's a particular intelligence that comes about how to nurture and nourish and support the flourishing of life. And so my approach is about how to nurture and nourish a human soul.
Mm-hmm.
What they really need practically in order to relax out of fear and control and judgment and
mm-hmm.
not be scared when the gates of their consciousness open up to reveal the vast landscape that takes us way beyond our thoughts and ideas.
Yeah, and what I also sense is that what is kind of could be challenging in this modern civilization with our tough schedules is the fact that for me it has a lot to do to really tune in what is now needed? What it's now about is now, do I need to rest? Sometimes I have just this feeling I need to lay down on the ground, and it can be for some seconds or for some minutes, and then I get up and I'm active again. I even don't know what was happening.
Harry, you and I are so on the same page, because that is some basic instruction I give to everybody. Is to set your timer. We all have way too many devices these days that ping at us. But what would be really helpful is to use these things to support us, to take ego relaxation breaks often. Because the minute we start feeling the grip of our ego, the tension in our body, the belief in our mind, I'm the doer and it's all up to me, and then the stressful habits and the pushing and the pulling and the judging, the controlling that arise, you know, when we're under pressure, the most important thing we need to do is just to stop for a moment and reset, to reset in the deeper ground of grace. And so I'm always inviting people to do exactly what you're saying. Lie on the floor, like really receive the holding of the earth. Take it in, the fact of that there's something holding you, doesn't have an opinion about you, that's welcoming you just to be here right now in this moment, however you are.
Mm-hmm.
Just let go into that. Let everything go into that. And be nothing, do nothing, get nothing, become nothing, seek for nothing, relinquish nothing. Be as you are, rest in God. And then, once the resets happen, and it need only take a couple of minutes, is to let our eyes open and to not leave that inner abiding, but to let light and color and sound, let the world come to you. And then that beautiful question that is a question that I live with daily, that you mentioned, what's needed now? And just to listen and let our actions be moved by that primordial grace that is pulsing everything, is causing everything to grow and move and be animated, and knows exactly what needs to happen, what right action is in this moment. We can really live our life in that.
Yeah, for me, it feels like, as when I do that, it feels like as if I would synchronize. I would synchronize with something much bigger, with, you could say it, grace, love, intelligence. And it's also very important that I don't try to figure out what is happening or to try to control it. It's just being there. And often what seemed to be very important and a very necessary thing, and minute ago when this happened, falls down and it's so clear that it's not about putting any attention to that. It's just clear that something else is there. It feels synchronizing and also putting things in an other perspective, as if something would adjust to an bigger order or to an order which I couldn't sense or see when I'm more in the habit of thinking about and wanting something, and that feels really beautiful.
Yeah, it is very beautiful to return to our primordial condition, where we recognize that all the intelligence, all the qualities of our true nature are available.
Mm-hmm.
Divine intelligence, divine love, peace that passeth all understanding, joy, not because of something, but just joy, you know, and clarity and pure awareness. These are all the divine qualities of who and what we are. And so when we return, when we drop out of the construct of me and my that thinks it's the doer, mm-hmm. what we reclaim are these chambers of grace that are always here because they're sewn into the very fabric of what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And they're always available. Mm-hmm. I love what Ramana says about grace. He says, you think of grace as something high in the sky that has to descend. But he said, really, it's in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And when the mind subsides into the source of itself, grace rushes forth, sprouting as if a spring from within you. And this corresponds with a lot of what the Christian mystics spoke about. They, and Sufi mystics too, they used the term wine, which really is kind of a code word for the living water. The substance that truly hydrates and nourishes our soul, that quenches our thirst, because it gives us back, you know, energetically, directly, experientially, access to the bounty of and the beauty of who we are, and that's always available, but we have to relax sufficiently in order to receive it. And so that's the work, and it's a paradox because it's more work actually to live out of your ego, but still we need the support and the musculature to be able to live out of that place.
Yeah, and what I also sense is that when I'm aware of that, it feels as if there would kind of a nectar really running through my system. That's right. And then it feels also that everything what I do or what I speak or what I look at is impermeated with this nectar, and all that the motivation of doing is then not coming from fear or from lack or from, it really comes from nurture. It comes from when you said this image of a spring, and it's mm-hmm. an overflow, and it makes such a difference when I like it. One of my dear spiritual teacher, he used to say, it's like if you would stand with your feet in the nectar and your hand would then do whatever is needed to be done. And this image I really also like a lot.
Well, I've just written a book on grace, and really the main structure of the book is what I call the four dimensions of grace. Grace is the primordial ground of our being, and that dimension feels like being in and part of an infinite mountain, total support to relax out of our ego defenses and fear and control and judgment. The second dimension of grace is about, you know, coming into the receptive state through cultivating those virtues of trust, humility, patience, joy, and others that uplifts us so and helps us to be spiritually hydrated and end that felt sense of inner poverty and lack. But grace is also the power that transforms us, the presence that transforms us and helps us cross over the shore of our consciousness to a whole new land of freedom and fulfillment and truth. But ultimately, grace is a way of being, and the what I call living the embodiment of grace, it feels like you're a human fountain. Mm-hmm. In the same way that if you observe a fountain, that living water comes up through the central channel, but it naturally bridges over, and in the process of recirculating its nectar, it slops out and hydrates the land around it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is really, I think, a very important thing to remember, that it's not just that some of us who get exposure to these teachings and practices get to live a more beautiful life. It is so that, you know, grace permeates our world, our collective consciousness more substantially, and that truly I believe that you and I and everyone, our fundamental ultimate purpose is to be a grace delivery device, to be a human fountain, and to let the nectar and the beauty and the blessings and all these divine qualities that start to come online the deeper we relax, to be shared further and deeper into our world that surely needs it right now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And Miranda, we are almost at the end of our conversation, but I would love if you could kind of share or guide us a bit in this experience of this inner fountain, just a few minutes, to really invite our audience to go into this posture of what we kind of talked about.
Sure. So if you just bring your awareness down into your feet for a moment, and maybe just wiggle your toes and make sure that your feet are on the floor, and bring your felt experience into the palms of your feet, so that you really take in the fact of the ground and you feel whatever you're sitting on, how that wraps itself around your body. Perhaps it's a chair. You really take in the ground underneath you and feel as if your own inhale is welcoming you just to be here, however you are in this moment, whatever you're feeling, whatever you're thinking or not thinking. And to feel as if each exhale is just a melting. So perhaps you might notice some body tension can melt. Inhale is a welcome. Exhale is a melting. And just melting in and down to this ground, and recognize that the ground underneath our feet that comes out of the earth is way more than it seems. So if you consider what causes the earth, what animates all creatures, what causes your own body. And if you just relax down and receive that immensity, that cause of all form, of all life, you might feel as if you're sitting in a vast mountain that has no circumference, no limit, and that you're grounded and stabilized and supported by a grace that's so intelligent, powerful, creative, alive, and supportive. Now, be aware of the space above your head. And recognize that not only are you already resting within an infinite mountain, but that you're already within a shower of grace and light. just like we naturally receive the light of the sun each day. So consider the possibility that you are in a shower of light already that contains all the blessings, all the love of all the enlightened beings. Of all celestial realms. As if you're grounded and stabilized from below, and infinitely blessed and nourished from above. Now let your awareness come to the heart. As if each inhale allows more space in the heart. Horizontal space. Vertical space. As if your heart is being breathed by love itself. And you are that love. In your own way, whatever you've received, just say yes. Just say thank you. Yes. Thank you. And may today you move through your day as that embodiment of grace, that human fountain you were made to be. And so it is.
What a lovely ending of our conversation.
Yeah, you're welcome.
A wholehearted thank you to you, Miranda, for this precious space and for your transmission and for what you share and what you are. And also a thank you to the viewers that they take their time and that they let it in and really let it sink in them. And may it really inspire and nourish and bring beautiful actions out of that space.
Indeed, yes. So, I just wanted to share as well that I have a new book coming out. I'm excited about. So, if people have really enjoyed this dialogue, this book will be coming out in the 1st of November, but you can pre-order it now. The Way of Grace, and it's got powerful inquiries and meditations in all of the 16 chapters, and it will be available as an audiobook too. And I was recording it last week, so really practical and helpful as well as inspirational for anyone who is wanting to close that gap between what we might have tasted and how we're actually living and become more graceful in and amidst it all. So, and people can find more about me and all the teachings and offerings on my website, which is just my name, MirandaMacPherson.com.
And we will also put the link of it and put your book and everything at the end of the video and also in the website.
Good. Well, I'm all about giving people real guidance as to the how, because it's not enough just to sort of talk about these wonderful ideas. You know, most of us, you know, just really need the support. How do I live it? And that's a much bigger body of work than having a big spiritual orgasm, you know. That's the beginning, not the ending.
This is also what I tend to say, to have those moments where your kind of spirit really enters you. That's, it's lovely, but then starts the work.
That's right, exactly. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Milena. I really enjoyed our time
together. Yes, and me too. Thank you. Bye-bye.